Thank you, Christina, for the introduction. Excellencies, colleagues, ladies and gentlemen, it's a real happiness to address such a gathering on the International Day of Happiness. At the outset, I would like to thank the DPI and all those who work hard to make this meeting a success. DPI NGO committee asked me to talk about two things today. And, you know, I have very short time, so I hope I would be able to cover them in a very brief and good way. The first thing is the history of the International Day of Happiness and how a resolution was adopted in the General Assembly. The second thing is my personal experience with the issue of happiness. So I will try to talk about both of them. It is a very well-known factor that Bhutan, which is a small country, was the first country in the world who raised the issue of happiness as an indicator for development, for progress, and prosperity. That was back in the 70s and the 80s. However, in 2011, Bhutan submitted a resolution to the General Assembly about happiness, but they didn't proclaim a day for international happiness. Therefore, I worked with a team of actors, actresses, artists, and I wrote a letter to the Secretary General in March 2012 saying that, Mr. Secretary General, I came to the UN in 2006 and I started working with you since your arrival. I know you work hard to achieve all UN objectives, eradication of poverty, education for all, health, Millennium Development Goals, et cetera, but all those UN objectives could be summarized with one word, which is happiness, because I don't think any human being can be happy without education, without health, without a job or a decent income. And then in April, I met two grandsons of the late South African leader Nelson Mandela, Ndapa and Kweka, who came to New York. So we went to meet the Secretary General, Ban Ki-moon, who immediately say, who doesn't want to be happy? He was smiling. We have pictures on the internet for that meeting. And then he encouraged us to go to the General Assembly. So we had a meeting with the President of the General Assembly, Nasser Abdelaziz al-Nasser, a friend with whom I worked for 7 years. He was Ambassador of Qatar, and then he became President of the General Assembly. And he immediately said, did the resolution of Bhutan proclaim a day? I said, no. He said, you need a new resolution. And he said, go and mobilize 80 countries which could support you to get two-thirds majority or a simple majority in the General Assembly to adopt the resolution. But towards the end of the meeting, he realized the importance of the resolution. He said, can I produce or can I introduce this resolution to the General Assembly as a president resolution? I said, that will save me a lot of time and effort. So the resolution was, I drafted the resolution, and then some countries, today I had a TV interview, and the guy asked me, was it difficult to get that resolution? Some countries, I wouldn't name any of them, because I still have friends in those countries. Some countries said, you have to add well-being to happiness. And I said, happiness is more international. If you talk to anybody, anywhere in the world, say happiness, they will smile. But if you say well-being, two words, what does it mean? Does it mean, you know, they insist. So we add well-being to accommodate their objection. Another country said, no, the date is no good. We end up agreeing on 20th of March. And everybody know that 20th of March, when the day and the night become equal, and 21st of March is the first day in the year when the day start to be longer. This is why we celebrate the day of Nowruz, which means the new day, because 14 or 15 countries in the world celebrate Nowruz as a new day. And farmers in the old days used to be inside, indoors during winter, but on 21st of March they start to go to the field again because it's the beginning of the spring. So on Nowruz Day we have also a resolution adopted by the General Assembly to celebrate 21st of March every year as Nowruz Day. We agreed 20th of March will be the International Day of Happiness. And since then, many, many organizations was established, and many, many people start to think of happiness. And some of them I worked with in the past, Make It Happy, Happy Assembly, International Happiness Initiative, and so many other organizations. I don't want to name all of them. So here we are today, celebrating for the second year the International Day of Happiness. And I intend this year to announce that I intend to have a consortium of all those NGOs to work as one body to achieve happiness for all. Because no single organization, no single person can achieve international happiness alone. Therefore, we should work together, we should unite. And I think if the world failed to make everybody happy by giving them a job or education or health, we can help people to be happy by teaching them happiness come from within, regardless of the circumstances. And here I will tell you my story, which many people insist on telling. I was imprisoned in Iraq when I was 22 years old only. I participate in a funeral of five people executed by the regime because they opposed the regime, and the funeral turned to a demonstration against the regime with shouting and shooting, arresting, and executions. So in the prison, they try to force me to confess that I'm a part of a secret organization planning a demonstration to topple the regime, which means for me execution and for them a big achievement, so they can go to their bosses, to the president, say, here we are, we discover a plot, maybe planned by the West, by CIA or MI6 or whoever, and they will be promoted and will get more money. So they torture me, and I didn't confess because I know I'll be executed. And then they said, we will break your will by breaking your back so you confess to what we want. I said, you might break my back, my hand, my leg, but you will never, never break my will. And I was tortured for several months until they gave up. I didn't give up for one single reason, because I always felt the suffering and the pain that thousands of messengers and prophets went through when they were selected by God and sent to people to guide people. They were all rejected. They were all fought, and some of them were killed and crucified. I remember Jesus being tortured and feeling he is the happiest on earth. This is how I felt. I felt I'm so higher than those who were torturing me. I felt they were so little because all they have is to put a person in prison and torture him maybe to death. Then they send me to what they call the Revolutionary Court, where there is no lawyers, no appeal, no nothing. And I managed to convince the judge that I was innocent. I went to a funeral of five people. They were executed, but they are dead. And one of them was living in my neighborhood, so part of our tradition is to go to his funeral. So the judge said, this time you managed to escape, next time, and put his hand like that, which means next time it will be execution. I fled the country. I went to England, where I start a campaign against dictatorship. Because I said, if I don't stand against dictatorship, if I keep silent as the majority did, in actual fact, the majority went with the dictator because they get benefit. They get promotion, they get jobs, they get education, scholarships. But those little few, and it's always a few who stand for justice, unfortunately, pay a heavy price. Eight members of my family were executed. The first three was a brother-in-law and two of the cousins. And they forced my mother and my sister, whose husband was executed, to take the bodies. They didn't allow any male member of the family to take the bodies to be buried, just in case if this funeral will turn into a demonstration, as it happened with me. So my mom and my sister took the three bodies to be buried, and then another two disappeared from the family, another three disappeared. After 2003, I went back to Iraq, and then I have another member of my family, a brother who was kidnapped for 3 months and was killed. Then I decided to come to the UN because Iraq was facing sanctions after the invasion of Kuwait by Saddam in 1990. The UN Security Council adopted more than 80 resolutions. 73 of them were under Chapter 7. The only chapter in the UN Charter which authorized the Security Council to impose sanction or to use force. So they have a coalition to liberate Kuwait. They imposed sanction, and they had to fight these 73 resolutions. And when I left the UN, all of them were terminating with all the efforts and the work we did. Now, what's happiness for me? Happiness for me is to give more and to expect less. When you give your life, you give everything. And I was expecting that Saddam could execute all members of my family. My mother, for example, who was my hero, most of the mothers would tell their sons, please, be quiet. Don't stand against the regime. They will kill you. They will kill us. My mom was encouraging me all the time. She was the hero. And you know, when I left Iraq, I told her, and I told all my siblings to leave Iraq because they could be killed. She insists on staying in Iraq alone to live in her big house. I said, how are you going to survive? She said, I'm going to bring a poor family to live with me. I will take care of them. They will be happy. I'll be happy. I said, that's a good idea. But they will kill you in 2 days' time. That's the problem. Why don't you want to leave Iraq? She said, I want to build a charity to take care of the orphans and widows, because she had 2 widows in the family to take care of. I said, I have a deal for you. You go outside Iraq. You go to Jordan to live with my brother and sister. I will build the charity for you. So we bought a house. We demolished it, and we built it as a charity. Now she spends 6 months every year in Iraq taking care of the charity. I said, Mom, my deal with you that you live outside Iraq. She said, if I don't care of the charity, who will take care of the charity? So this is a sample of a woman in Iraq and maybe in many other countries who really have the courage, who are heroes, maybe unknown heroes, who stand for justice, who make us happy, who sacrifice to make us happy. So what I'm saying is happiness comes from within. Even when I was in prison, even when I was tortured, I felt I was happy, maybe the happiest person, because I felt there's a cause I am living for. We are humans, not because we eat, drink, and sleep. Animals do that. We are humans, we can have a reason. We have a soul, we have a feeling. We have to feel how we could in 21st century tolerate that children are dying because of poverty. How millionaires and billionaires, you know, there are more billionaires in the United States than the whole world. How could they live on billions of dollars while people cannot have food to survive on? I can't imagine that. This is why I feel that I should designate everything I have to poor people. Because when I read the Quran, the Bible, and the Torah, I read that all of them state that God created all humanity from one man and woman, Adam and Eve. So we are one big family. We are cousins. We are brothers and sisters. We should care about each other. We should help each other. We shouldn't let women being, you know, abused. You know, human trafficking is using women for dirty money, you know. We have to stand for good causes. This is why I think happiness, when you feel you stand for good reason, when you feel that you are helping others, you will have the real happiness. Now, we saw so many celebrities, rich people, millionaires, billionaires, singers, actors, actresses, die because of overdose of drugs. Whitney Houston, Michael Jackson, Hoffman, Phillips Hoffman. They have the millions. They have the fame. They have everything. But I don't think they were happy. Otherwise, why they use drugs and more drugs and more drugs? Because they feel hollow inside. They feel empty inside. There is no real cause. You know what? Bodies need food to survive. If you don't eat, if you don't drink, if you don't sleep, you will be tired, you could die. But we have souls. We have reasons to feed with knowledge, but we have souls to feed with good cause. I was invited to international prayer breakfast. Every year with the president, I attended three with President Bush and four with President Obama. National prayer breakfast. 4,000 people gather every year in Washington, D.C. to talk about prayer breakfast. And I'm going to finish in this and stop. And every year they invite many important people to tell their stories. You know, one year, Tony Blair, who's a very good speaker with a good charisma, I met him with him in London when I was in London. I met him here in the UN several times. He said, when I was 9 years old, my father had a stroke and he was taken to a hospital. However, my mother sent me to the school. I told my teacher my father had a stroke. He was taken to hospital. So the teacher said, son, let's pray to your father. And Tony Blair said, sir, I'm afraid my father doesn't believe in God. And the teacher said, doesn't matter, son. If he doesn't believe in God, God still believes in him. If he doesn't care about God, God still cares about him. Since then, Tony Blair became a very strong believer. He told us in a speech in London, he went for a holiday, 2 weeks holiday. He took the Quran. He read the whole Quran in a... You imagine Prime Minister under a lot of pressure going for a holiday with his family for 2 weeks reading the Quran? He go to Jerusalem because he's special envoy, UN special envoy for Middle East. He said, what's that secret in this place, in the holy place in Jerusalem, that all the prophets, Moses, Jesus, and Muhammad should come here? Then we had Mike Mullen, the former chairman of chief of staff. He said, many soldiers, American soldiers, go to Afghanistan or Iraq, don't believe in God. Once they are ambushed, once they are, what they say? God help me. They don't say, oh, my father, my mother, or president, or God help me. There were the miners who were trapped in Chile, 500 meters below ground. They were trapped for 2 months. They said, the first thing we start to pray, they remember God when they are trapped inside, you know, their mine. And then even the day they left, they said, we say our prayer before we leave. When they left in a tube for 500 meters, they said, when we went out, we put on T-shirts saying, thanks God. We say, thanks president or thanks government or whoever, you know. So believing in God, and what I like in the U.S. is that they are a nation of faith. They are a nation of God. And when you help others, then you have the real happiness. It's not only real happiness, but I can tell you and assure you it will be eternal happiness, because the soul we have, according to these holy books, are part of the soul of God, which is eternal. So if we die, the body will go to the grave, but our soul will be eternal. If your soul is happy in this life, you will have happy in this life and happy in the hereafter, which is real happiness and eternal happiness. Thank you very much for your listening.